are still waiting for Congressman Paul to join us, hopefully here any minute. I want to cover this editorial that he published yesterday. The irrelevance of military victory. In other words, it's not even relevant if we have a military victory, depending on how you define victory. He goes on to say, a military victory in Iraq is unattainable, just as it was in the Vietnam War. At the close of the Vietnam War in 1975, a telling conversation took place between an NVA colonel named Tu and an American colonel named Harry Summers. Colonel Summers reportedly said, quote, "You never beat us on the battlefield." Tu replied, "That may be so, but it's also irrelevant. It is likewise irrelevant to seek a military victory in Iraq. As conditions deteriorate in Iraq, the American people are told more blood must be spilled to achieve just such a military victory. 20,000 additional troops and another $100 billion are needed for a quote-unquote surge, yet the people remained rightfully skeptical. Though we've been in Iraq nearly 4 years, the meager goal today simply is to secure Baghdad. This hardly shows that the mission is even partly accomplished. Astonishingly, American taxpayers now will be forced to finance a multi-billion dollar jobs program in Iraq, which, I gotta say, is probably the best idea yet, maybe the only good idea, though I'm sure it is insult to injury, folks, when we've been paying all this money so far and getting nothing for our in the way of results. He goes on to say, suddenly the war is about jobs. We export our manufacturing jobs to Asia. Now we plan to export our welfare jobs to Iraq. Good point. All at the expense of the poor and the middle class here at home. Plans are being made to become more ruthless in achieving stability in Iraq. It appears Mitada al-Sadr will be on the receiving end of our military efforts despite his overwhelming support among large segments of the Iraqi people. It's interesting to note that one excuse given for our failure is leveled at the Iraqis themselves. They have not done enough, we're told, and they're difficult to train. Yet no one complains that Mahdi or Kurdish militias or the Badr Brigade, the real Iraqi government, not our appointed government, are not well trained. Our problem obviously has nothing to do with training Iraqis to fight, but instead with loyalties and motivations. We claim to be spreading democracy in Iraq, but Sadr has far more democratic support with the majority of Shiites than our troops enjoy. The problem is not lack of democratic consensus. It's the antipathy towards our presence among almost all Iraqis. In real estate, the three important considerations are location, location, location. In Iraq, the three conditions are occupation, occupation, occupation. Nothing can improve in Iraq until we understand that our occupation is the primary source of the chaos and the killing. We are a foreign occupying force, strongly resented by the majority. It's a democracy. By the majority of Iraq citizens. Our inability to adapt to the tactics of the fourth generation warfare compounds our military failure. Unless we understand this, even doubling our true strength will not solve the problems created by our occupation. The talk of a troop surge and jobs program in Iraq only distracts Americans from the real possibility of an attack on Iran. Our growing naval presence in the region and our harsh rhetoric toward Iran are unsettling. Securing the Horn of Africa and sending Ethiopian troops into Somalia do not bode well for world peace. Yet these developments are almost totally ignored by Congress. Rumors are flying about when, not if, Iran will be bombed by either Israel or the United States, possibly with nuclear weapons. Our CIA says Iran is 10 years away from producing a nuclear bomb and has no delivery system, but this does not impede our plans to keep everything on the table, quote-unquote, when dealing with Iran. We should remember that Iran, like Iraq, is a third-world nation without significant military. Nothing in history hints that she is likely to invade a neighboring country, let alone do anything to America or Israel. I am concerned, however, that a contrived Gulf of Tonkin-type incident might occur to gain popular support for an attack on Iran. Even if such an attack is carried out by Israel over U.S. objections, we will be politically and morally culpable since we provided the weapons and dollars to make it possible. Let's hope I'm wrong about this. And I think it would be safe to say we all hope you're wrong about this, Congressman Paul. I would also like to say that I hope I'm wrong about the majority of my research over the many, many years we've been out researching and fighting the InfoWar regarding 9/11, domestic spying, and all of the rest. The coming North American Union, which is now being taught to professors at ASU and to students at ASUs, are being conditioned that we're North Americans. We're not Americans. We're international citizens and not citizens of the United States. That we don't have rights. We have privileges, and we do have to have some kind of blessing by the government in order to even enjoy the God-given inalienable rights that we should have. Say that word three times fast. It's hard, folks, especially in the middle of a sentence when you're ad-libbing on a talk radio program. So, yes, I hope you're wrong about an attack on Iran. I think that will be, if we're not already there already, it will be the beginning of the end. And I hope we're wrong about all this. Unfortunately, the record shows we've been right the majority of the time. We do have Congressman Paul with us. Needs no introduction. Ron Paul, Dr. Paul, thank you for joining us on the program today. I know we're limited on time, but a lot of people really wanting to pat you on the back for throwing your hat in the ring for the 08 elections. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be with you.
And is that official? I know you're doing an exploratory committee, but we assume that this is going out into a full-fledged presidential campaign.
It's official that the exploratory committee has been filed. The information was put into the public a little sooner than we thought. We thought that we would have a little time to prepare and make a formal announcement, but it got out there last week, and we've had.
Are you surprised at the overwhelming support you already have and how excited people are to have you in these debates and have you part of this process?
Tell you the truth, I am. There are others who are more optimistic than myself, and therefore it's very encouraging, you know, because, you know, running a campaign like ours will be, you know, you don't get the tens of millions of dollars that the establishment politicians will get. But in this day and age with the Internet and radio programs and shortwave, you know, there's a lot of people out there that we don't know about. And hopefully the surprises will keep coming.
Dr. Paul, I think that your Internet campaign, your grassroots efforts, which we've already had just tons and tons of people write in and call in to say that they're going to support, will eclipse what Howard Dean did in the last election. And obviously you're coming from the position of being an honest broker. And I think this is something that can really be contagious to America. Why did you decide ultimately to jump in the ring here?
I think it was the election had something to do with it. Because it, to me, looked like the Republicans have awakened to a degree and said, enough is enough. It doesn't mean they've had a conversion yet, but at least they're getting pretty annoyed. Of course, I've been annoyed all along with our foreign policy as well as the Republican acceptance of increasing entitlement programs and not caring about the deficit. So the Republicans have lost their way. So I think there are people waking up in this country. I don't know how much we can do to save the Republican Party, but at least that's the vehicle that I'm using right now, and hopefully enough people will consider the Republican Party to send the establishment a message.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are obviously going to be people out there that automatically see the word or the title Republican, and they're going to run with their pants on fire as far away as they can get. And obviously, we're not going to be targeting those people. But I think, you know, as your campaign unfolds and people start hearing this, you know, we're going to start tapping in, Dr. Paul, to the 100 million or so people who don't vote in this country, who have no interest in the political process, and who have potentially given up altogether.
And there's a ton of them, and a lot of people just call them apathetic. But, you know, if it's in the calculated person who has analyzed the situation and came to a conclusion that, you know, there is no difference and they make a deliberate choice not to vote, I would say it is a vote. It's a vote of non-acceptance of what they've been offered. So there are some people who are apathetic and they don't know what's going on, but I think there's a lot of people like you described. They're just sick of the mess and they don't participate. Yep. And maybe if we can energize them, they will.
Now, Dr. Paul, are you a member of Skull and Bones?
No, I've been waiting on my invitation.
Are you a member of the Bilderberg Group?
No, maybe now that I've announced, I'll get an invitation.
Right.
For the trilateral agreement or CRP, CRS, or all that. I haven't joined any of those yet.
We just covered your story, the irrelevance of military victory, which also segues into the speech you gave, I believe, in front of Congress, which was aired on C-SPAN, talking about the fact that Iran can bring about the next Gulf of Tonkin incident. I'd like you just to comment on that briefly, if you could.
Well, this is what I fear, is that although the American people have spoken out in the election, they're tired of Iraq, and they certainly wouldn't endorse spreading the war. At the same time, when we listened to the president the other night saying, yeah, we made mistakes, we need to change things, but he's changed things by sending more troops. At the same time, you know, he was pretty sharp against the Syrians and the Iranians in his comments, which means that they would like to spread the war, and yet the people won't accept this unless there's justification. You know, there has to be a reason.
Yeah.
And that's why we should be leery of any kind of an incident that pops up and some Americans get killed and say, see, we told you it was all due to the Iranians, and therefore we have to, you know, go and attack. And they're probably not planning because they've run out of troops and run out of a lot of military equipment. We're not even strong enough anymore to invade another third world country. That tells you how much it's drained us. But we still have this high tech stuff and missiles and bombs and airplanes and all these things. And they're liable to use that, but that's going to just infuriate another group of people, you know, and just make us more vulnerable than ever.
Yeah, as General Tony McPeak once told me, he ran the air campaign from the Gulf War. We're creating terrorists faster than we can kill them. That was 2 years ago, and I don't think we've done anything to alleviate that. How was that speech received in Congress?
It was pretty well ignored. but, you know, my friends listen, and they pay attention, and we have a small little group on our side, and there's a small group of Democrats who are honest with this issue. And I get encouragement, but the biggest response comes from, you know, outside of Washington, the people who happen to catch it on the Internet or on C-SPAN. And that, of course, is what we need. We need encouragement. I don't think there's much chance of us really converting Washington, D.C. We just need to get the American people activated and willing to send a message up here so that either the members start changing their ways or they'll have new members up here.
Well, I mean, you told us what to look for, and I'm glad you said that, and I'm glad it was on C-SPAN. I'm glad it's circulating heavily around the Internet. That is, again, your Gulf of Tonkin comparison speech regarding Iran, and I hope people are waking up to the possibility that this could happen. And if it does happen, and we're told that, you know, this, again, is the pretext to go into war and move into the next theater, that people remember what you said and question the information that we're given. Dr. Paul, I wanted to take a few calls because I know a lot of people are anxious to talk to you and give you the warm and fuzzies, so to speak. And you were a little late. I don't know if you'll be able to stay a little bit longer than the end of the segment.
I think I can handle 5 more minutes.
Okay. Well, let's do it now. Let's at least give a couple of callers a chance to talk to you. I know they've all been waiting. Let's see. Do we have John in Texas? John, are you with us?
Yeah. Hi, Jack. Hi, Dr. Paul.
Hello.
It's an honor to talk to you. Hey, I would like to plug a website that I know Alex and Jack knows about. It's called voter-smart.org. And I'm using this website to contact all of the members of the 110th Congress, including all the 50 senators. And Dr. Paul, I sent you a letter today. I'm going to read you one sentence from it. And it says that I want a complete, impartial, and totally independent investigation on the events of September 11, 2001. I'm tired of this bogus garbage about terrorism. Ask Michael Meacher about how he feels about this bogus war on terrorism. Can you comment on that, please?
Well, that would be nice to have. Unfortunately, we don't have that in place. It'll be a little bit better with the Democrats now in charge of oversight. But, you know, for top-level policy, there's not a whole lot of difference between the two policies. So a real investigation isn't going to happen. But I think we have to keep pushing for it. And like you and others, we see the the investigations that have been done so far is just more or less cover up and no real explanation of what went on.
Yeah, I mean, fair to say, out of all the candidates out there, the one most interested in reopening the investigation and clearing out some of the questions is Dr. Paul, and you should be commended for that. Cliff in Idaho. Quickly, Cliff, we're out of time, but, you know, put something on the record, and we'll get Mark in Florida in at least as well. Go ahead.
How you doing there, Mr. Paul?
And, hello.
Thank God for you. Now I have somebody I can vote for. You ought to stay in touch with Lou Dobbs in a way, too. He could put some good words out about you, I think.
Yeah,
I've been on his show a couple times.
Yes, I know that, but you need to stay in contact with him. Something else, too, this black box voting and stuff. I mean, I don't trust it at all, the votes at all anymore.
Yeah.
And something else I want to get in real quick, and then I'll let somebody else get on, is that... I'm going to be coming in a few million dollars here pretty quick, and as soon as I do, I'm going to get in contact with you and help you out.
Sounds good.
I think thank you for the call, Cliff. I think people will give you their last dime to try to push your campaign forward and rub their hands to the bone to work for you, and that's what's so exciting that we finally... Dr. Paul, and I know this is embarrassing for you here, but I mean, we really finally have someone we believe in jumping into the process here, and I speak for millions and millions of people around the country. I'm going to go to Mark in Florida, but real quick, let's get in a website. Is there a website where people can track the progress of your campaign?
Yes, go to ronpaul.org, and it will immediately refer you to another website. ronpaul.org is the easiest thing to remember.
ronpaul.org. Mark in Florida, final word for Ron Paul. Go ahead, make it quick, please.
Yeah, Dr. Paul, I was just calling him. So many people, you know, they run on a campaign, they say they're going to change this and they're going to change that. What's going to take you and set you aside from these guys after they get in, they're like Bush and all these people, and they don't do what they say?
Yeah,
fair question.
What can you tell the American people in reference to
that?
Well,
I guess all you can do is look at my record and see if I do what I said and that I would do, and I think pretty much I've stuck to that and get credit for it. But to tell you the truth, I, as an individual, can't change the country. We can lead, we can suggest, we can get it, but only the people can accept it. So if the people still want to go to war and they still want big government socialism, one individual can't do it. So we have two jobs. One, getting the political leadership that we need, then of course doing what this radio station does so well, is get the information out and get our supporters animated and get involved in bringing about these changes.
Well said. Dr. Paul, I appreciate you making time. I believe that this is the first interview you've done since you've announced. We're going to be tracking and working with you throughout this process. And, of course, you know, if you need anything, just give us a call. Dr. Ron Paul, thank you so much for joining us. We'll come back, wrap this up. Big finish on the Alex Jones Show coming up right after this, folks. Stay tuned.